You're listening to Policy Currents, a weekly podcast from RAND. I'm Evan Banks.
And I'm Deanna Lee. Every Friday, we bring you new insights from RAND's latest research and commentary. It's April 12th.
Interference from foreign governments. Allegations of fraud before voting even began. Continued assertions that the election was stolen. The 2020 presidential election was mired in controversy and conflict, culminating in an attack on the U.S. Capitol and, ultimately, eroding many Americans' trust in elections. As the 2024 presidential election approaches, a new RAND paper considers whether and how these threats could resurface, as well as the potential for new challenges to election credibility. The authors focus on the vulnerabilities of three types of assets that are necessary for fair democratic elections: physical assets, such as voting machines, human assets, such as election officials, and reputational assets, such as public confidence in elections. Although threats to any one of these areas could undermine the credibility of U.S. elections, there's also the possibility of a perfect storm in which several seemingly unrelated threats target these assets simultaneously. Furthermore, artificial intelligence could accelerate the effects of this storm. To help policymakers better understand potential threats to U.S. elections, the authors explored two fictional scenarios. In one scenario, Russian hackers use AI and fake social media accounts to simulate authentic grassroots conversations to sow doubt about election integrity. In the second scenario, Iran compromises voter rolls and uses AI-generated images to reinforce public doubt about election results. Gaming out such scenarios is key to guarding against risks to U.S. elections, the authors say. They also recommend focusing on efforts to increase public awareness about potential threats and how to detect them. And proactive steps should be taken to protect elections at all levels of government, especially at the local level, where voter registration systems could be hacked and where unauthorized access to voting equipment is a vulnerability. The federal government has a responsibility to support state and local officials who are responsible for carrying out elections and provide them with the resources they need to secure their voter rolls and election equipment against cyber and physical threats, as well as mis- and disinformation campaigns. Steps like these can help ensure the integrity and legitimacy of U.S. elections and help to rebuild Americans' trust in the democratic process.
Japanese Prime Minister Fumio Kishida was in Washington this week for a state visit with President Joe Biden, the first such visit by a Japanese leader since 2015. This historic moment reflects deepening ties between Washington and Tokyo. And following meetings between the two leaders, a number of enhancements to economic and security cooperation were announced. According to RAND's Jeffrey Hornung, now is the right time for the Biden administration to elevate the alliance. Writing in Foreign Affairs just before Kishida's visit, Hornung discussed the recent history of the U.S.-Japan alliance and why it's so vital to American interests. Just 10 years ago, Hornung says, there was still an active debate over Japan's strategic significance. But today's Japan is investing more in its own defense and is more willing to involve itself in security affairs beyond its borders. This is exactly the kind of ally the U.S. needs in the current moment of geopolitical competition, particularly between the U.S. and China. What's more, Japan is central to all of America's other relationships in the Indo-Pacific. For instance, Japan is one of NATO's partners across the globe, which means it participates in the alliance's discussions of mutual security concerns and cooperates in numerous security areas, such as arms control, maritime security, and outer space. No other U.S. Indo-Pacific ally plays such a key role in so many groupings of allies. For this reason, the alliance with Japan should be the hub of U.S. diplomacy in the Indo-Pacific, Hornung says, and the rest of the Indo-Pacific countries and their many mini-laterals should be the spokes. This arrangement would provide a focal point to discuss current security challenges, such as China, North Korea, and Russia, and help coordinate policies to deal with these actors, both in the Indo-Pacific and beyond. Hornung notes that many describe NATO as America's indispensable alliance. While NATO remains a top priority, he says, given the geopolitical shift to the Indo-Pacific, quote, it is time to make the U.S.-Japan alliance far more central to American grand strategy.
Moving on to another U.S. relationship that's vital to countering China, India. Unlike the U.S.-Japan alliance, however, America's partnership with India remains fundamentally fragile. That's according to RAND's Derek Grossman, who cites two key areas of friction. The first is India's wavering democratic values. The U.S. is growing more and more concerned that Prime Minister Narendra Modi and his party are making India less tolerant of minorities, especially Muslims. In recent years, Modi's administration has implemented repressive policies that include curbs to freedom of expression, peaceful assembly, and other basic rights. These and other signs of a democratic backslide have many policymakers in Washington worried. The second problem area is India's recent moves that explicitly counter the West, including its strong strategic partnership with Russia. India is a member of the China and Russia-led BRICS group, comprising Brazil, Russia, India, China, South Africa, and five recently added countries, as well as the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, which includes China, Iran, Pakistan, Russia, and several Central Asian states. Not only that, Russian President Vladimir Putin has called India a, quote, true friend, and India has, in violation of U.S.-led sanctions, increasingly purchased discounted barrels of Russian oil, so much so that India is now Russia's number one export destination. Further, India has purchased Russian arms for decades, meaning that the majority of India's military hardware is of Soviet or Russian build. When Russia invaded Ukraine, Washington was hoping that New Delhi would distance itself from the Kremlin. However, India has done nothing of the sort. Rather than condemning Russia for invading and seeking to destroy a sovereign neighbor, an indisputable violation of the rules-based global order, India has retained close ties to its Cold War ally. The U.S. and India will have to address or agree to ignore these challenges if the two countries want their tenuous partnership to continue to improve, says Grossman. Whether or not that happens will, quote, shape geopolitics for the rest of the 21st century.
U.S. veterans who have put their lives and health on the line for their country should have access to safe and healthy working conditions after leaving military service. An important first step in achieving this is understanding the working conditions that veterans currently experience. That's where a new RAND paper comes in. Using national survey data, the authors examine veterans' vulnerability to poor working conditions, look at the differences in the types of jobs that veterans and non-veterans hold, and identify potential opportunities for improvement. Here's a rundown of some of the findings. Evidence suggests that veterans are uniquely vulnerable to poor working conditions. Veterans report more musculoskeletal injuries, and working-age veterans report poorer health, more chronic conditions, and more work limitations than their non-veteran counterparts. This is partly because military service is physically and psychologically demanding, and the effects of those experiences can follow veterans long after they transition to civilian life. For example, veterans' exposure to burn pits and other environmental hazards could result in injuries or conditions that are exacerbated by their civilian jobs. And many veterans experience PTSD, anxiety, or depression, which can be lifelong struggles. Data also shows that veterans may be more likely to work in unhealthy jobs as civilians. This includes jobs in fields such as natural resources, construction, maintenance, transportation, and material moving, all of which typically involve greater physical demands and exposure to potential hazards. This analysis sheds new light on an important topic, but the authors note that there is still a lot to learn to make changes that can improve working conditions for veterans. They offer up two key areas for future research. First, identify what works to enhance employment transition support for all veterans. The transition from military to civilian life can be difficult, but it's made even more challenging by the fact that no single federal agency or branch of the military is responsible for the process. Second, explore regulating post-9/11 GI Bill benefits to promote gainful employment. This would involve ensuring that payments from these benefits can only be received by schools whose veteran graduates earn more on average than their military basic pay before separation. The researchers are careful to note that any future policy changes should be informed by robust data on veterans' employment outcomes, including job quality, earnings, career satisfaction, and workplace conditions.
That's it for this week's episode. If you'd like to learn more about what we discussed today, check out the show notes at rand.org/podcast. We'll see you next week. RAND is a nonprofit institution that helps improve policy and decision-making through research and analysis.